Well, here we are again. You and me.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. Yeah. If you like that sort of thing.
Oh, well, they're going to get a bit weird, all right. Don't you dare.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is, folks. That's what it is. Get used to it. That's what it is. Hey, stop it. Hey, get your hands off of that. Who do you think you are? Man, awfully forward of you. Hey, what's up? What's up? My name's Ron Van Dam. Welcome to the program. If you're not familiar with me, then I don't even know why you bother, to be honest with you. But you're good people. You're good people. I love everybody, just like Trump loves his daughter.
If Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
You know? Stop it. So weird. Stop.
You know what? You are
moving on.
Yeah. Terrible. Yeah.
You're
terrible.
Known for saying outrageous things, Mr. Trump.
Anyway, welcome to. I'm sorry, Mr. President. I'm sorry I played that, Mr. President. Oh, man. Don't scare me. Don't scare me. Trump's approval ratings on the Republican side are close to 50%, which means there's a hell of a lot of assholes on the planet. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you an asshole. I really, really didn't. You're not an asshole. You're simply ignorant. I'm sorry, you're not ignorant. You're simply not well informed. And I think I'll leave it at that. You're not well informed. You're listening, you're worshiping a guy who is delusional, who lies about his facts. When he quotes things, they're wrong. He's totally ignorant to various situations in the world and how to handle things. The world is not a business. It's, as a matter of fact, most of us have been fighting all our lives not to make the world a business, to make it more of a humane place and less of a business place. So, I mean, I totally don't understand you guys. You're only voting for him because he sounds like you do. And if you just listen to what you just said, you've just embarrassed yourself. All I can say to any Trump supporter, very seriously, listen to me now. All I'm asking you to do is not change your vote necessarily. All I'm asking you to do is listen very carefully and don't just get hopped up about the magic of the magic show. Listen to exactly what's being said to the ignorance of that presidential candidate. And he may curse like you do, and he may be as honest as you are behind closed doors, but that doesn't mean that he should be the president, because the president can't do that, because there's more at stake, like our lives. So be very, very, very careful. Be very careful. Maybe Trump should have been a senator. Or maybe even a governor, if that's what you want. But please, I get on my knees to you. Not president. Not dealing with other world leaders. Please, you don't understand how volatile that situation is. And you can't have a guy that shoots his mouth off in volatile situations. That's how somebody gets killed. If you have two people standing toe-to-toe who violently disagree with each other, if one says, oh yeah, Punch me in the face and I'll kill you, you little rat. Your mother wears shoes that don't even have any soles on them. Your mother had sex with my sister. I mean, you piss somebody off enough, they're going to take a blow at you erratically. That is not, you can't put someone like that into the role of president, I'm sorry. And I told you there's going to come the day when your little five-year-old child is going to walk up to you in your house, you mommy, you daddies. So your little child's going to come up and they're going to say, hey, dad, hey, mom, fuck the both of you. You're both fucking assholes. You're all bullshit. Both of you are bullshit. You don't know how to run this house. You've been running this house like bullshit. You're both a bunch of motherfuckers. Excuse my language. I don't talk like that. I'm doing a theatrical impression of what a little child will start saying to their parents. And the parents will say, why don't you talk to me like that? How dare you? And the child will say, well, that's the way the president talks. Or that's the way the president talked when he was running for president. So, like, what's so wrong about that? You voted for him. Think about the consequences. It's like going into Iraq. Think about what the outcome would be. Think about all the consequences of what you're doing here. If you want to change this country and you want to change the way things are run in this country, don't do it from the president down, because they can't do anything about it. You do it from your community and you work up to president. But you don't, when you're not happy, you don't immediately commit suicide. And if you're not happy with this government, don't commit suicide with Donald Trump, because that's what you're doing. All right, I'm sorry. It's just my interpretation. You do what you want to do. It's a talk show. I'm talking.
Now that he is finally free of the constraints of terrestrial radio and into the anything-goes atmosphere of the podcasting world, we can finally say that Ron Van Dam is one badass motherfucker. What was that? Okay, that's the way it's going to be? Great. Fuck you. You're listening to the fucking Ron Van Dam Show on Metro South Podcasting. I didn't even say anything that time.
Yeah, well, I'm not running for president, so I guess I can do things like this. But of course, those were bleeped out, and they were done as an example of how absurd and ludicrous this whole thing is. By the way, that's the name of an actual musical act, Ludicrous. And isn't that ludicrous in itself? I actually, if you don't know me, and I hope you don't, because I go out of my way not to have you know me, you know. By the way, thank you for your many cards and letters about my cold and the fact that I had laryngitis over the weekend. Thank you so much for all your cards and letters and your many gifts. I do appreciate that. He said sarcastically, I am a prude. I am a prude. And I don't exactly know what that word means. Well, I do know what the word means. I don't know what it is to you, your connotation of a prude. A prude would be somebody that is just so straight-laced that they do everything according to the books and according to etiquette and all that kind of stuff. And yes, I raise my hand. I am guilty of that. When I was brought up in a tiny little home in Teaneck, New Jersey, my parents did not curse around me ever. I never, ever heard them mutter a curse word, even if my father took a hammer and slammed the hammer on his hand, he still wouldn't have cursed in front of me. They had great restraint. My mother never would ever, I don't think she did otherwise. So We never muttered, my brother and I never muttered a curse word in our home at all. We didn't know what they were. And then, of course, I got released into society, and that would mean the school system. The school system is where you learn all your social skills. By the way, I talked about this a few days ago. School education is not reading, writing, and arithmetic. It is learning social situations, how to get along with people, how not to get along with people. Again, Donald Trump, a perfect example of a schoolyard bully. Again, a negative situation for him. I learned all that from my schoolmates, all the cursing and stuff. And I still didn't curse because those things couldn't come out of my mouth. I always open doors for not only for women, but for everybody. And I do to this day. If there's someone coming up behind me, I will hold the door open for them. And I believe you do the same thing. I will help a woman on with her coat. I respect women, not because they are weaker than my sex, simply because I was brought up that way. I was brought up to be courteous. I don't know why. I really don't believe that women need help putting their coats on, nor do they need help opening doors, nor do they need to go first through a door if I got there first. I really don't believe that is necessary. However, it is a display of one's civility, and I have no problem with that. I don't know. Maybe in the back of my mind, if I open a door for a woman or put her coat on, she'll have sex with me. Maybe that's what's going on. I really don't know. If that's the case, whatever. But I do it, and I do it happily, and I do it automatically. But I would do that for anybody. That's just the way I was brought up. And to this day, when the few times that I curse on the air here, my friends will say to me, "Ron, it is so unnatural to hear you curse because you just never do that." And I agree, no, I do not. And it is unnatural for me to do it, but it's, you know, part of this sometimes. When you're displaying emotions and anger, you're supposed to do it because people think that's then you're genuine. But I don't do it on purpose, and I don't do it frequently, and I really shouldn't be doing it at all because it's not me. And again, people who know me will tell you, I am just not like that. I just don't do that. Those words to me are ugly words. I have a greater command of the English language than throwing those words into my daily sentences as adjectives and nouns. I don't need them. I have a command of the English language. I can express myself accordingly. And if I'm angry, I will say I am angry. I will not throw that F word into it in order to enunciate it because I find it to be an ugly word. And when someone else says it, I notice it and I cringe. When I go to a comedy show, and I go to comedy shows quite a bit, I enjoy comedians. I was one myself. But when they start cursing on stage, unless it's very indiscriminately, I will actually leave a performance if there's too much cursing because I just find it too distasteful. I find it to be low life, to be honest with you. I'm sorry to say that. I don't know why there should be class attached to how one speaks, but they do. There is. I don't know why. We're all born in this country. We all go to the same schools, really, have the same curriculum. I don't know why you choose to be profane and I choose not to be. Maybe it's the way we were brought up. Maybe if our parents cursed, then we shall curse accordingly. I've talked about this before. There's cursing on television now. I'm not for it. I'm not for it. I believe that every psychologist, every doctor, every professional will tell you that human beings require boundaries. Without boundaries, we would literally be animals and kill each other or eat each other up. Without boundaries, without rules, without etiquette, without law, things would run amok. Children, when they're growing up, they fight against the boundaries. They fight against the rules. Yet if you sit down and talk to them in a psychological session, they crave the rules. They crave to be kept in line because that shows love and concern. So what's going on with our society? What is happening to it? Why is it that every day that we progress, we go backwards? Why is it that we are not becoming more civil with each other? We are becoming more uncivil with each other as every passing day. Why are we becoming less accepting instead of more accepting? Is it that terrorism thing? Was it not the goal of terrorists? Is it not their goal to break up society, to make us turn on each other, to break down our very roots, our very fibers of civility, to change the way that we live, to live in fear of them, to break us down to the point where we start disintegrating? Well, perhaps bravo, because they seem to be breaking down the American way of life to the point where we now in America argue with each other more intensely than we ever have before. And if you don't see it, I certainly have, and most people have seen it, how we tend not to get along more so. And that's exactly what they wanted, to argue amongst ourselves and to break ourselves down to the point where our strength is nil. So I suggest, ladies and gentlemen, Republicans and Democrats, whoever you may be, instead of taking sides, it's time for us to find people that unify us, that unite us, that bring us together so that we can take proper action, as opposed to dividing us and arguing amongst ourselves while other people come in and slam us over the heads. That is not a unified America. And I don't believe our founding fathers thought that we should be putting assholes into influential positions. The idea was that the people are a lot smarter than that. I question that theory at this time. I also are very disappointed that in this vast society of over 300 million people in this country, that we can't find a couple of saviors that act respectful, civil, intelligently, express themselves well, are great orators, do not divide but unite. Surprised that no one comes to the forefront like that. Certainly not Mr. Trump, who somehow during his run for president has not made America great again, has kind of made America worse in a very short period of time. Okay, that's enough of my expounding upon things going on, and those of you that disagree with my political views are probably quite upset with me at this time, but I don't know. It's just really sad. I just never thought that it would come to this level. All I do to anybody is ask you to think a little bit deeper than your emotional reaction to things and understand just how important your decision really is. And when you, I was a hippie. The part of the social revolution. But I want things to be better, not worse. Okay.
Are you aware that one in every seven Americans is in desperate need of a dope slap? Studies show that every 17 seconds in America, someone writes, says, or does something so incredibly stupid that they deserve to be slapped, and you can help. If someone you know commits an act of boneheaded stupidity, simply extend your hand with the palm facing to the side, draw your arm back, and deliver a sharp, solid blow straight across their forehead. It's called a dope slap. It only takes a moment to perform, but the lesson can last a lifetime. This has been a message from the American Dope Slap Association and Metro South Podcasting.
Okay, let's turn it around a little bit and get away from that kind of talk. One of the greatest frustrations in the world is sitting in traffic. And those of you that live in major cities across the country realize that that is such a freaking waste of time to just sit in traffic and stare out the window of your car and go, I'm not moving, I can't move, and I'm stuck. I can't go backwards, I can't go forwards, I can't go sideways. I'm just stuck. I'm at the mercy of traffic. So we thought today that we would take a look at that. There is a report that came out from the INRIX people. Those are the people that are in many people's cars. It's an app on your cell phone. And they've come out with a study as to how much time you actually sit in traffic. And it ain't pretty. It ain't a pretty survey. It ain't a pretty result. Let's say hello to Chris Handley. He's a VP Product Management and of Analytics at INRIX and joins us now. What part of the country are you in, Chris?
Morning. I'm calling you from sunny Seattle. Well, not to play now, Seattle. But that's where we're from.
Okay. We're talking about traffic, and I know that a survey was done recently that your company does an annual survey on traffic. What is that survey about?
It's all about mapping where the worst congestion is across the country, mm-hmm. Looking at the worst cities, where the worst corridors, and how the cities rank.
Okay. Now, let's get started. We're in the Boston area, and I know from driving in it, to me, it's the worst in the country, but I think everybody in a city says that of their own city. How does Boston rank?
Well, unfortunately, this year, Boston came out number 7. With an average of 64 hours a year that's lost in traffic.
That's
64 hours that people are spending not moving or 64 hours a year in increased commuting times.
Now, 7th worst out of how many?
Well, that's 7th out of the whole country in terms of the cities that we've measured.
Okay, all right.
Los Angeles comes in at number 1 with 81 hours, and across Boston, I-93, I-94,
yep.
They're the worst in the region in terms of travel corridors.
Wow.
During peak times, commuters are seeing double the commute time as they traverse that section of roadway.
How does it compare to New York City?
We're slightly below New York this year. New York's in at number 5.
Wow.
It's a challenge. We've seen increases across all of the East Coast cities.
Yeah.
Mostly driven by increases in employment and dropping fuel prices.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about INRIX. Been around a while. I happen to be a user. It's my go-to situation. And it's great. And I know that you're constantly testing for upgrades.
Yeah, we have an app out there that people can use. And we believe it's really the most precise traffic model out there. We consume data points from over 250 million different vehicles, and we use that to create a real-time model of what traffic is like across very detailed sections of roadway across the country. And then we use that model to predict what future traffic will look like, do things like routing, and giving you accurate estimated times of arrival.
I totally don't understand traffic, and I don't know if there's an actual name for someone that studies traffic, but I'm always confused about sitting in traffic, bumper to bumper, or not moving at all, and then I reach a certain point, and it starts moving, and it's like, okay, and I don't see an accident, and I don't see an exit. There's just absolutely no reason for what happened. Do people express that to you?
Yeah. It's a human effect. Someone will be looking at their phone or not paying attention, and all of a sudden they're closer to the car in front of them than they thought they were going to be. They slam on their brakes. That causes a chain reaction. They can ripple all the way back through miles of traffic behind them.
Unbelievable.
And then it takes a while for that to clear. And then they'll start moving again. And so, unfortunately, that's the human factor in traffic.
Yeah.
In the future, when we move to autonomous vehicles, you're not going to see that as much because there'll be a much smoother flow. There won't be these jerks or rubbernecking or people stopping because they weren't paying attention.
So is the answer to less traffic, say something in the Boston area, is it wider roads? Is it less people on the road? What relieves these results?
Well, I think Boston, like most cities, has gotten to the point where building more roads really isn't an option. Yeah. It's more about how do we get higher throughput to the roads that we have.
Yeah.
In the short term, those traffic patterns are going to be subject to how many people are using the roads, which is driven by the economy.
Mm-hmm.
As more people get jobs, more people will get on the roads. Fuel prices, as fuel prices drop, more people are going to drive. There's going to be less incentive to take other modes of transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And so those two factors in the short term are really going to drive the traffic volumes. In the longer term, as car sharing or ride sharing and as autonomous vehicles become more prevalent, that's what's going to be the real factor in decreasing traffic.
How much does construction enter into it? Because, I mean, we have to keep the roads up and all that, but construction causes slowdowns all the time as well.
Yeah, construction is a huge input into traffic slowdowns. We see a lot of the congestion spots are caused by construction, and that's really what we're trying to do with our scorecard and some of the services we offer is to benchmark that and provide numbers so that when there's decisions being made about when to do construction, about how to do it, that it can be done in a way that minimizes the impact.
Yeah. And the other is to use mobile apps such as INRIX, because then you can avoid this congestion, find other routes that can get you there faster.
Exactly. So commuters setting out, even though they travel that same commute every day, if they can look at their app and see ahead of time if there is construction or some sort of adverse weather or an accident, finding that alternative route is going to save them time, and it's also going to help keep the roadways more clear.
I congratulate you, because I in my area have Comcast. I'm not proud of it, but I do have it. or the Xfinity, whatever they want to call themselves today. And there's an app on the screen in the actual Xfinity X1 box that I have, and it's your traffic service that they feature. It's the only one on there. Did you know that? I guess you knew that.
Sure. We provide our traffic information to a number of different outlets so that they can display to customers at the most appropriate time notifications about traffic. What's changing? Is there unexpected delays? So that people can perhaps leave earlier or at least expect this and make arrangements.
Excellent. Okay, so it's as simple as going to your smartphone or computer and downloading the app?
Yeah, it really is. You'll see our apps in both the Google Android, the Android and Apple stores.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to find out more information about how those apps work or about some of the traffic details behind that, they can go to our website at INRIX.com and find all of that.
Okay. I always thought that if you're going to sit in traffic, you might as well do something. And I always thought, wouldn't it be fun if the person in the next car was like an attractive female or something? And you could just like talk to her on your phone. But I guess that wouldn't work, because then you'd be stalking them. But I always thought it was interesting just to have conversation, people in the next car or something. But I guess that's impossible.
Yeah. Okay. I don't. That's not really on our roadmap right now. But I understand. It would be a fun function to have.
It would be fun to a point, I guess. Okay. Thank you so much for your time today and for the information. It's something that we all experience, and when we do, it's not a happy one. So, thanks for finding a resolve for this and making it a little bit easier to commandeer that inconvenience. Take care of yourself, Chris.
Sure. Thanks for the time.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, it's a problem, man. I will tailor my activities due to traffic, and I will use their service, not to, you know, do a commercial for them or anything, but I will use their service to see if I should leave earlier to get to a place or I should avoid and take a different route. That stuff has become crucial these days. You know, it's ironic. We're in the Boston area here where we do this show. And, like over 10 years ago, they had this thing called the Big Dig. I mean, everybody throughout the country knew what this was. They dug under the city of Boston in order to put the main thoroughfare through under the city, as opposed to an elevated, which it was before, which was always backed up in traffic. And they thought, well, this is going to ease traffic, both coming from north and south, going toward the city of Boston and going out as well. And here we are, these years later, and traffic is just as bad, if not worse, because the number of cars just keep increasing. And everybody's response to this through the decades has been ride sharing. It's always been that. Carpooling, setting up carpool lanes, which gets you into now the city faster or quacker, whatever. I'm sorry, I'm still on cold medications and I don't know what I'm saying. You have to excuse me. But that doesn't seem to work either. And this ride sharing thing, I tell you, I'm going to tell you something, man. I'm going to tell you, to be honest, I would rather get into a taxi cab with a registered taxi cab driver than get into an Uber or this other thing, Lyft, I think they call it, where some guy is, or girl is just using their car to pick you up. I mean, I'm not comfortable with that. And the prices of the Uber and the Lyft or these ride-sharing companies are just about as much as a taxi cab. Sometimes, in some cases, they're actually more. I've been taken by Uber drivers in New York City, where I've paid a lot more. I went from one location in Brooklyn to another location in Brooklyn, and it was an Uber, and it was like something like $25. And on the way back, there was a taxi cab outside of the location. I got in a taxi cab and asked him to bring him back to my hotel, the same distance, the same route, and it was only $12. I mean, and that was in a registered taxi cab. So, you know, you can be taken anyway. I don't believe in ride sharing. I don't believe in sharing anything. As a matter of fact, if someone is drinking from a glass, I won't even share that with them. I want my own glass. I don't want to put my lips where your lips were, unless I really know you and I've already kissed you and had wild, passionate sex with you. Otherwise, I'm not interested at all in sharing anything with you. I'm not sharing with you. Well, I am on a much cold medication. It's the only way that I can survive and do this show. I did have laryngitis over the weekend. Yesterday's show, I was barely able to get a group of sentences out without fumbling and mumbling and scrambling. Today, I feel better, still nasally, though. Just feeling better every day. It's funny, this is, of course, Chicago, not the city, and that's the problem. When they named the band Chicago, they never were able to get Chicago.com as a website because Chicago gets that automatically. So now they have to be ChicagoTheBand.com. Yeah, you know, you choose your name.
So now the time has come.
When you reach for a beer, what are you looking for? The finest malts, grains, and hops? An artisan ale that represents a modern take on traditional brewing techniques that master brewers have refined and treasured for years? A true beer drinking experience? Or, like most of us, are you just looking to get f***ed up on the cheap? Well, if you're like the rest of us, congratulations, your beer is here. It's Falkenhalter. It's not a great beer. It's not even a good beer. It's a beer that's $4 a case, and it's strong enough to melt the chrome off a trailer hitch. So kiss your liver goodbye and say hello to Falkenhalter. It's beer.
Yes, it is. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the close of another program, and I so much thank you for all your participation, of which you have none of. If you care to participate, and I underline the word care, you can do so by emailing me and telling me what you'd like me to talk about. Maybe there's a subject matter which is pressing to you, or perhaps you'd like to be a guest on the program, or whatever. Or whatever, give me some type of adulation, some type of nice thing. You can go to ronvandamshow@gmail.com, ronvandamshow@gmail.com. And by my last name is V-A-N-D-A-M. There's no N after that, just for your gratification. I still get a lot of mail coming to my house addressed to Mr. Dam. And sometimes it has the N after it, and I say to myself, are you even allowed to address an envelope like that? But I guess they are, and I guess they do. So there you have it, ronvandamshow@gmail.com. I still sound nasally, don't I? I can hear myself sounding nasally, like there's cement in my nostrils, and it feels like there is. But I shall overcome. We shall overcome. And I don't believe that song was written in order to combat colds. I don't believe it was. Could have been. Could have been the original intent of the song. I really don't know. I have a really bad cold today, Joe. Well, you shall overcome it. Hey, wait a minute. That sounds like a great song about colds. We shall overcome the cold. That's great. Hope someday someone doesn't take that song and turn it into something more meaningful. No, that would be horrible. Yes, I hope so. Well, good luck with your cold, Joe. Oh, no problem. Thank you very much, Sydney. I never met a Sydney, by the way. In all my years of existence on this planet, I've never met a Sydney. I think I met a Sid that was a watchmaker, an old Jewish watchmaker in the Bronx. I think I met a Sid, but a full Sydney? No, no. And I know they're out there, and I know they exist. I know it. I keep the faith that somewhere out there, there is a Sydney. There's just got to be. I've lived a long life, not long enough. Hope there's more to go. I've seen a lot of things. I've seen the Aurora Borealis. Unfortunately, it was in black and white. It was a film about it. I've seen women do strange things to men, and men do equally strange things to women. I've seen people come and people go and people stay. I've seen wealth, I've seen angst and poverty. I've seen the good in people, I've seen the bad in people, that I know. I've been to places that you wouldn't even go to. I've done things that I'm not proud of. I've done many things that I am extremely proud of. I've done more things that I'm extremely proud of than things that I'm extremely not proud of, which means the extremely proud of part wins over the extremely not proud of part. Yes, I've lived a full life. My eyes have been wide open, not shut. I've gone through life with observance and wonderment, not with blinders. I've known the difference between right and wrong, right and left. And yet, through it all, I've never met anybody named Sydney. I wish you peace, ladies and gentlemen. Take care. Bye.